One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice.
Welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show, Building the Collective Conscious, a show that is created to give space where your voice, ideas, and informed opinions can be heard, appreciated, and debated. I am Michael Eric Owens.
And I am DT alongside my good friend, Michael Eric Owens. Man, we are back in this thing.
Wow, we are.
And black in this thing.
We're extremely happy to be back in the show. And, you know, just... We had an exciting show last week.
Yeah, man.
And we talked about how we were going to go into this 3-part series on American Christianity and nationalism. So today, that's what we're going to be dealing with. And I don't know if you had an opportunity to see what happened in North Carolina here just over just on December. It was just what yesterday, I believe, that the KKK had a march in
the good old
in North Carolina in honor of Mr. Trump's potential ascension to the Oval Office. And I was reading the article and it was kind of funny because they had so much counter protests out there that they had to delay, and then they had to move the, you know, where they were going to do the parade at.
The KKK back down, huh?
But it just shows you again, you know, this kind of this precursor to what we're talking about today, this emboldenedness mm-hmm. of people that have this worldview. And so, man, today also in the studio with us, we have a now he's been with us before.
Yeah.
So it's not his first time on One Mic, One Voice. Right.
Yeah.
But we have a distinguished scholar in the house with us, and we're so privileged to have him here.
Yes, sir. Dr. Paul Ketchum, right now assistant professor at OU for criminal justice, actually received his PhD in sociology from Texas A&M. Now his research is focused around race and crime, race and education, and race and gender and media. So definitely glad to have Dr. Ketchum back in the studio. It was a really good time last time. Man, the cat is funny too, man. Kept me laughing last time we were in the studio, but we're in a new place.
Yeah. So what do you think about the new place? Welcome to One Mic, One Voice.
Well, I love the new place. I know you guys are both sweating because you don't get a chance to edit what I say this time.
I think the sister version of you is probably better without the edits.
But you know, it's great to be doing. Really, we did a live show in the past, but this is kind of the new platform that we're going to be doing now. Folks, hopefully you're listening to us you'd link with us on our Facebook page or our Twitter, and you can communicate with us,
right,
as we go through the show. And and Dr. Ketchum is here for the ride. Now, that's dangerous. You know, sometimes you just want to pop in and pop out on one mic. When you're here for the ride, you probably going to get yourself in trouble.
I'm expecting to.
Exactly. And
I enjoyed my job at OU while I had it.
Okay. Right.
He's giving it up already.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah. You're gonna release that already. But you know, just the I guess over 900 now hate crimes that we've seen since the election. I mean, it's growing each and every day. I mean, you see the videos that are going viral about that. I think for someone to say that there's not some level of causality there, I think they have to be, their head must be in the sand.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's a clear connection. What you're seeing is essentially tribalism, bullying, that where you don't have the same sanctions you once had against it. So you've got two different aspects of dealing with that kind of stuff in society. One is creating sanctions that keeps that kind of behavior in the background. It doesn't quite bubble up. And that's what we've seen. That's when people like Eduardo Bonilla-Silva are talking mm-hmm. about colorblind racism mm-hmm. and stuff like that. This is that that settled racism, where it always existed, but people mm-hmm. weren't jumping out there and committing these acts or saying these things in public.
Absolutely.
It was more of a quieter, more subtle version of it. And we're seeing with following Trump's lead, mm-hmm. we're seeing people believe that it's okay.
Absolutely.
To go ahead and express these racist views.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because after, folks, we're going to take a break. But when we get back, we're diving into this thing. Mm-hmm. We're going deep. We're unpacking what has happened in our country. So, folks, stay with us. We'll be right back.
What's up, guys? I am Leah Marie, owner of The Selfie Gods. Make sure you head over to our website, www.theselfiegods.com, and order your very own selfie moon. If you need that good lighting whenever you out in the club or you out hanging out with your friends and you need some more light for your selfies, that's definitely what you want to get, the selfie moon.
Hi, this is Tiffany Hill, host of Authentic Conversations, a weekly motivational podcast where we discuss matters such as self-worth, relationships, parenting, professional development, physical, emotional, and spiritual health. You can find me on Facebook at Authentic Conversations by Tiffany Hill, on social media at @th_authentic, and you can also subscribe to Authentic Conversations on iTunes and Podbean, and the show is also available on blackandstudios.com. I look forward to connecting with you, and remember, to live authentically is the ultimate form of happiness.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. You know, me and Doc, we communicate on Facebook, and we had a very interesting
y'all communicate, or y'all team up on people. What is
we teamed up?
we did team up, and but it was almost one of those things you couldn't walk away from, and it was kind of in response to this video that went out there about the white gentleman that got beat up by those blacks because they believe he voted for Donald Trump. And of course, you know, nobody condones violence that's despicable on either side of the aisle. But I had made a comment which was not associated with that, in the sense that we need to fight. You know, we really need to get engaged to do whatever is necessary to change the trajectory of Trumpism in our country. And so we had a respondent, a white female, that just jumped into the conversation. And Doc, you can kind of take it from there.
Well, I you're doing a great job with the story. I was just, like you, I was surprised at the direction her defense took, where she was essentially abdicating all Christian values mm-hmm. whatsoever, and then saying she was doing it as a Christian. Mm-hmm. And that's where you and I got kind of involved with this
Absolutely.
Disconnect, because it was an odd attempt at bullying on her part, mm-hmm. but her rationale for it made no sense whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And you and I went through a number of motions of, mm-hmm. of pointing that out to her very clearly. But she never really – she just disengaged rather mm-hmm. than acknowledge the logical flaws in what she was saying.
And I mean to
and,
say –
And moral mm-hmm. disconnect.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And to say that you are a Christian, and we're talking about American Christianity and nationalism, to say that you are a Christian and to have voted, which she did openly say she voted for Donald Trump, mm-hmm. evangelical Christian. And to say that it is okay,
right?
It is okay to overlook bigotry and misogyny and discrimination and sexism. It's okay to look over all of those things, right? But I'm justified in voting, as her explanation was, the economy,
right? Right, which also didn't make sense by her understanding of it. And again, that's something we kind of addressed. And I urge people to go back to that thread.
Yes.
Because it should, this is why you need to edit this. It should still be on your thread there.
Yes.
But yeah, it was a fascinating discussion because of its disconnect. And we see it time and time again on issues of morality, of religiosity, where they're claiming this is why we need Trump. And then it's not fitting in with you know, what their claims are. There's just this bizarre disconnect. We see the same thing on economics, which is where she fell to. Mm-hmm. People be claiming, well, you know, it's good. We're going to have this guy come in and he's going to fix the economy. It's like, no.
Exactly.
I mean, it's not very likely. And the only thing that he's argued that may fix the economy at some level or may benefit the working class is protectionism. Mm. But most of the people who wouldn't benefit from it. You know, so it's just the more I discuss on like social media and observe and all these other formats of communicating with people, the more it's clear that this was primarily about race and gender. Mm. And it was still amazingly about race, despite the fact that it was Hillary Clinton running, not Barack Obama. Yeah. That issue of race, she recently I was on Facebook with the number – in fact, last night with a number of people who were arguing that Barack Obama was too pro-black. He was trying to help blacks above whites to the detriment of whites. He was treating whites unfairly, and he was all about race throughout his presidency.
Interesting.
And he just wasn't. So these issues keep coming up, but they become a smokescreen. Like for this gal, her bias, her racism, her sexism, her all of these issues. She covered it with her religiosity, and this is the reason the younger generations are walking away from religion in record numbers. We're seeing people see the disconnect. And, you know, if you're not bought into the system, into the religious system for a number of years, it's much easier to walk away. If you're younger and you see, you know, you're coming of age, you see the hypocrisy of one set of teachings, but a completely different set of values.
And I mean, that's a great point. When you look at the numbers of what we would call white evangelicals, this is an older group.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the young people are absent from that. And what's interesting when you talk about evangelicals, they do not lump into that group black Protestants. So it's strictly white, older people. That I think that you hit it on the head, Doc, this idea of hiding behind some type of religious dogma. But at the base of that is race. Mm-hmm. And the base of that is loss. And that's why we talk about nationalism, this idea of somehow the gain of one race is a loss of another race.
The belief that it's a zero-sum game.
Oh, absolutely.
I agree completely. There's this, in fact, I was involved with another discussion on your post and I mentioned the term, relative advantage and this idea where each group, if we accept as the evidence suggests that we've moved in this kind of political area of tribalism of some sort, then each group is looking for some sort of advantage over other groups. Mm-hmm. It's not that you are necessarily the most successful. It's compared to X, my group Y is doing much better.
Mm-hmm.
And so at some point, the only way to defend some of these tribalistic moves are to frame them under very vague, generalized ideals such as religion or economy or whatever the case is. And those are the two that keep coming back up.
Absolutely. The but are do they truly believe that that they're not
hypocrites?
Do they truly believe that they are on the side of right and that the choices and the behavior that they not that they make and they model somehow justifies what's taking place in our country. I mean, we go back to Manifest Destiny. We go back to the city on the hill. We go back to the skewed narrative of America being this Christian country because of the founding fathers who had slaves. So the hypocrisy is from the beginning. Can they truly within themselves say, I'm not racist at all?
Well, I don't know if they can truly say it when they're making racialized comments, actions, etc. But I think what happens is most people compartmentalize, and that's kind of a self-defense mechanism. So you have this denial of some of the actions that you're doing. You don't look very closely at them. If you don't look at what you're saying very deeply. And this is why, I mean, Trump was very successful being incredibly vague. And we're seeing that quite a bit. This idea of, you know, these generalized ideological statements over hard, cold facts have been kind of holding sway for a little while here. And the religiosity, I would argue, is simply used as a convenient cover. It takes nothing to be – there's no test to being a Christian or a Muslim or a Jew or any other group. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to pass an exam.
Yeah.
There's no examination of your actions except in the afterlife. So you can say whatever you want and claim allegiance to this group and use that group as a cover.
And hasn't it become more of an ideology – more of a system of, I would say, a political system rather than a belief system, because it does come with certain political views. I mean, when we talk about Christian conservatism, in other words, Christianity can no longer stand by itself. It's attached to something, right? I'm a fundamentalist Christian. It's attached to something that further identifies it as, well, it's cloaked as a belief system, but actually it's very much based within within policy, and I think as well as within the society itself, but never truly acknowledged as being that from those on the inside.
I think it's hard to describe religiosity in any single version of it as being what is. We have different groups of people who are very strong and consistent in their religious beliefs of whatever religious group you belong to. And we have others that subscribe to those beliefs peripherally at best, but they still have the same label as Christian. So you have, you know, both of these extremes. One person may be devoutly religious,
pious,
and another is clearly in name only, using it to manipulate.
Sounds like the argument against Islam.
Well, the great irony is, yes, they're using that argument. Some in the Christian community are using that argument to attack Islam, and the ones making that argument are guilty of the exact same thing.
So the question is, who are these quote unquote evangelicals? Folks, when we're going to take a break here.
Sounds like such a heavenly title, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it does. Evangelical. You know, it sounds like you have, ascended from the, you have overcome gravity in a sense. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to unpack who these evangelicals are. 81% of them voted for Donald Trump.
Record
okay.
Numbers.
54% of women evangelicals voted for Donald Trump. We're going to unpack that, folks. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is Josh K.
And I am Leah Marie.
And when we listen to podcasts, we always listen to
One Mic, One Voice. You can change the world, it's your choice.
Your choice.
This is Richard Taplin, host of the Black Box Podcast. Wanted to tell you, thanks again for listening to the One Mic, One Voice. Please be sure to check out their Facebook page, One Mic, One Voice Podcast. And while you're on Facebook, go ahead and stop by Blacken Studios. Also, check out our website, blackenstudios.com, to find all the podcasts that record here, including the One Mic, One Voice Show, The Black Box, The Elijah Bailey Show, The Roxy by Design Show, and also the Gamer Stand Podcast. Thanks again for all of your support, and remember, it's Blacken.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice Show. Folks, we have a short audio segment here we want you to take a listen to, and I think this will give us an indication of what we're dealing with today with American Christianity, evangelicals. We're having a little technical difficulties here, but we're gonna have the video, the audio up here in just a second. But going back into our topic here, who are evangelicals? So Trump would not have won the election without them. That's clear. Many of them struggled throughout the election with whether or not he passed the religious test, which the Constitution says there should not be any religious test. But it happens every time, right? With a Republican candidate, there is a sort of religious test, right?
Actually, also with Democratic candidates.
Mm-hmm. Actually, you exactly. We look, we want them to carry a Bible. We want them to go to church. And so, so that there is this religious test that happens, which the Constitution says there should not be. But we find here that the evangelicals, for the most part, believe certain things. For instance, they're anti-the environment.
Okay. Well, I think this has all been very fluid, because we've had some evangelical leaders step out in the last few years explaining that this is, you know, God's creation, so we have to protect the environment. We see this kind of back and forth. We've seen very much changing values, and that's, I mean, that's what we're really talking about here, especially with the election of Trump, with the evangelical support, is how what is acceptable or what is desirable from the evangelicals as a block has changed over time. And where this all started with this Facebook post on your page, it was the hypocrisy of saying very anti-Christian things and then saying you were making those statements based as being a Christian, as this lady was doing.
You know what's funny, too? And again, I don't want to talk disparagingly about him, but we do have the video. We have the audio now. We're going to go to the audio, and folks, we'll be right back.
Seven Iowa Republicans, all evangelical Christians.
When it comes to choosing a candidate, does your faith and your beliefs come first?
Yes.
Only one in our group is sure he's voting Trump.
The relationship Mr. Trump has with God is between him and God. I am not the one here to judge.
Others in the group don't agree. One of the biggest...
I think if I do something wrong, I think I just try and make it right. I don't bring God into that picture. I don't.
What it causes me to do is pray for him, because he will never know the peace that he can have from forgiveness.
Trump also raised eyebrows among the group when he said this.
When we go in church and when I drink my little wine, which is about the only wine I drink, and have my little cracker, I guess that's a form of asking for forgiveness. And I do that as often as possible because I feel cleansed, okay?
When you hear Donald Trump say, I have a little wine at church, I take a little cracker, and I feel cleansed, is that enough for you?
I believe that it represents, in a symbolic fashion, the body and the blood of our Lord Jesus Christ. And consequently, it is a serious thing for me. And so when somebody just makes it sound like, oh yeah, I just do this and do that. Yeah, that does bother me.
But I didn't feel as though he was 100% sincere, like he really understood what communion was about, and that concerns me.
This group has heard Trump say that the Bible is his favorite book. But when asked about his favorite scripture, he told reporters it was too personal a question.
When you become a Christian, you want to tell others what happened to you. Mm-hmm. Before I was saved, I didn't care about telling anybody about Jesus Christ.
So you're saying,
but once I gave my heart to the Lord, I thought, man, everybody needs to know how to go to heaven, and I wanted to tell everybody.
On other important issues like immigration, the group as a whole is happy to see Trump has the nerve to address it. They agree the southern border needs a wall. Meanwhile, on the issue of abortion rights...
The fact that at one point he supported abortion rights and now he's pro-life, or says he's pro-life.
Well, for me, it just, if you're either you're pro-life or you're not, that's where I'm at.
If Trump turns out to be the nominee, would you all vote for him?
That is the one thing we have to do. We have got to rally. He may not be the perfect person, and there isn't a perfect candidate out there that has everything, but we are going to have to rally around whoever becomes the nominee.
Wow. Wow.
You know, the thing that struck me the most about that video clip is that when they asked him, they said it's too personal of a question to ask him about which Bible verse.
I can't tell you. I'm offended.
But the Bible is his favorite book.
Oh, yeah, his favorite book. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, to me, like, even
that
like.
It doesn't mean he read it. It just means it's his favorite book. Yeah, up
it's
on
his
the
favorite
bookshelf.
One to look at.
Yes, he hasn't opened it yet. He'll give us a
Holy
favorite.
Holy Bible, huh? But I was thinking to myself, like, even as somebody who, you might even skim the Bible. You know, like everybody knows Philippians 4:13. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Like, that would have been an easy answer, you know? I mean, and relative to the situation that he's in right now.
But we get sucked into trying to prove where Trump is wrong when everybody knows he's wrong. I mean, there's nobody that thinks that Trump is a great Bible reader. I mean, nobody thinks that. So what
too personal of a question.
Yeah.
Don't want to get into it.
There's nothing about Trump that suggests he is anything close to the ideal evangelical, which brings us back to the evangelical support. And this was kind of what fascinated me most about this was not just the disconnect between what they said they believed in, what Trump was saying he believed in, we've got to fully support him. But the fact that for some of these people who are claiming to be strong Christians and supporting Trump and then listing these things that they want to do that are so against the teachings in the Bible, it appears that what they're using – their religious stance for is not for religiosity, mm-hmm. but for power.
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's what we keep hiding from
is
religion has a history of doing this. We've seen, you know, throughout history, many different churches and movements, where power becomes the goal rather than religiosity. Well, Catholic Church, I was raised Catholic. Mm-hmm. The Catholic Church is very famous for their very un-Christian things that they've done under the guise of church. Mm-hmm. But we're seeing that – it seems that we're seeing that again with some of the Christian movements here where they're saying we don't want immigrants, we don't want poor people, we don't want to help anybody.
Mm-hmm. And one thing I will add to that is, you know, I had a unique experience – coming up as a Baptist, but also immersed in Catholicism. If it had not been for the Catholic Church, I would have been in a school. I would have been bused to a school because of Milwaukee's refusal to integrate their schools. I think about Father Grappi and the great work that he did during the 60s and the 70s as a Catholic priest. And also, we just had him. We just had a sermon last week, Father Michael Flager. That's matter of fact, I just got a text from Josh. Mm-hmm. They just left the church. They said he was on fire today. So they're going to send us the CD. So, you know, with One thing I will say, the church has a history, whether it's Catholic or Baptist, or we want to say a Protestant, has a church of a history of being on the right side of social justice in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah. But fact, also, it's been a driving force exactly. for social justice.
But also, I think we're looking at something completely different here. We heard in this segment that, yeah, it's okay to build a wall and to shut people out. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about, didn't God create, if your Christian belief is that God created all of us, he didn't create just Americans, right? He didn't create just what Europeans? Mm-hmm. God created, he made man in his own image and he said it was good, right? How in the world can you sit back and say it is okay to disrupt families, to kick people out of a geographical space simply because your belief system says it's justified? No, it's hiding within, it's cloaking within this idea of maintaining white nationalism, power, status quo in the American system. It has, it's the face of it is religion. Matter of fact, I say the face of it is Donald Trump right now. But the reality is these folks do not have the courage to come out and say, well, some of them do now, right? Some of them mm-hmm. do now and say, look, you need to go back to Africa. Like Donald Trump said, black lives don't matter here. Go back to Africa. I'm saying, what do you mean, man? I'm back to Africa.
I was born in America. I mean, where do I start? But what part do you want me to go to?
And the white nationalists, right, have a philosophy of making or maintaining this as a white dominant nation. Evangelicals support a white nationalist candidate. Now, they're not part of the KKK or the we would say the white supremacists or the neo-Nazis, but their actions support the same policies that oppress and subjugate minority folk. That's the conversation, Doc, that we have a very difficult time because they're high pine. I think the president's a great man. I just disagree with his policy. You disagree with his blackness. Mm-hmm. But you can't come out and say that.
Mm. Right.
See.
Or you couldn't. Now you can.
Oh yeah. Now you can.
But I think we've seen it for a while. We're seeing this developing schism in the Christian community where you have this split. And historically, we know this is what it's coming to. But you see this split between those who are calling themselves Christian and pushing mm-hmm. for traditional Christian beliefs and those who have changed the meaning of Christianity, the interpretation of Christianity to better reflect other goals. Mm-hmm. And so you have that tear and Christianity plus as is every other major religion has gone through periods of these periods of change where you have the split between the more, traditional belief members and those who are trying to make it more populist. There's some great studies on that. In fact, there's a sociologist who used to be at Baylor who's done some beautiful work on that. And it's something that we see happening. But what you see right now is this group, and this is long before Trump. Mm-hmm. You see these different groups under the guise of Christianity promoting different policies mm-hmm, mm-hmm. that are designed for centering power mm-hmm. rather than for furthering Christianity. Mm-hmm. And we've always had groups that, you know, that have an agenda and so forth. But what we're seeing is this manipulation of traditional views of Christianity to something different. So this idea of kicking out Middle Easterners. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's not like we've been taking in many refugees to begin with.
Exactly.
But this idea of brown Middle Easterners mm-hmm. being dangerous to a group that claims to worship and think the brown Middle Easterner is the son of God is a little disconcerting.
And it's typical when you think about what we just listened to. This idea, DT, that this man does not stand for anything I believe in.
Yeah, but we have to rally around him.
But we have to vote for him.
Have to.
You know, the question is why? Why? See, that's the question they don't want to answer. What? If he disagrees and doesn't stand for anything that you believe in, why do you have to rally behind him?
The man said in the video that, you know, the relationship between or the relationship that Donald Trump has with God is between him and God. So in that realm, he's not responsible for anything that he really, you know, stands for.
Hatred.
Yeah, right.
Discrimination. Bigotry. Misogyny, sexism.
And what I found is that, you know, there were a lot of in the closet.
I grabbed her by the pussy.
Yeah, got to. we found that there are a lot of people who are in the closet voting the uncut for Trump. Version. Right. Voting for Trump, right? And so I listened to a video clip, and it was like a Sunday school teacher, you know, kind of revealed to the Sunday school class that she voted for Trump, and she hadn't said it before, you know, he was elected. And then that sparked a conversation, opened up the others who was like, oh, I did too. I just didn't want to say anything.
Wow. Yeah.
But I think we've also developed this political system that fosters that type of extremism through religiosity in any other group. If we go back to especially the gerrymandering of congressional districts, you allow – and sorry for the – there is a connection here that I'm making between the politics and the religiosity. But you've got these very, very safe districts to the point where extremists in each district control – the elected representative. Yeah. So instead of having what we'll call purple districts instead of, you know, bright red or bright blue districts, you have these very strong districts where you so that you have less cooperation. A congressman or woman from a very conservative district has to be ultra conservative, which feeds into these kind of extreme, you know, let's use religiosity to further our power agenda, even if that agenda is fluid, which we've seen what the evangelicals have stood for politically has changed dramatically over the last 20 years. So we're seeing this fluidity there, which bolsters the arguments about power. So with these like congressional districts that are so gerrymandered, this extremist view gets more support. I would argue that in a political system where you have more competitive purple districts, again, for lack of a better term, you don't give as much power to two different religious groups and so forth. You are forced to a more mainstream because, again, going way back to what started the Facebook post that started this, this was a gal who was on a roll who felt empowered to bully. She felt empowered to bully. And in this case, she wanted to bully blacks. And she went out of her way to change the subject to bully. And that kind of power comes from extremism being allowed to feed upon itself.
You don't have to hide anymore now.
You don't. But also people – Trump is out doing his rally tour right now. And we all saw how that becomes kind of a feeding frenzy. Bad ideas are bantered about by enough people in a group and excited and those bad ideas become very acceptable. And so you get this kind of strange group dynamics, but we allow that in Congress. Congress's views don't represent the public
at all. So like in the spectrum of religion, right, mm-hmm. is the idea that, you know, regardless of what his viewpoints are, mm-hmm. regardless of if it contradicts my personal beliefs, right, I have to have the spirit of forgiveness being a Christian. Mm-hmm. Mm-mm. And so in all realms of forgiveness, I have to accept Trump because he's not a perfect person. No. And that's a lot of people's. No.
Let me say this. And your point speaks to this sort of piety that we would like to think exists in evangelicals, this sense of. But we don't say we don't.
Well, it's an image that's promoted.
Yes. And we don't see the same deference to Clinton, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's a false perception because mm-hmm. if then they would forgive Clinton mm-hmm. of her wrongdoings, right? Mm-hmm. And Clinton would actually align more. She was married to the same man, right? She didn't have affairs, right? She didn't say vulgar things. Her speech was very temporal. I mean, Clinton actually aligns more to the evangelical message than Trump mm-hmm. does. The problem is this. They will not admit that they feel as if they are being cut out by a government that is supporting minorities and minority rights, and that minorities are somehow having more resources being given to them. They feel like they are losing their country. Let me say this. They feel like they need to take their country back. Mm-hmm. And Donald Trump represents that. Mm-hmm. Has nothing to do about God, has nothing to do about religion, has everything to do sure. about white supremacy and white nationalism.
It is a political movement under the guise of religiosity.
The cloak.
Yeah, and it makes actual religious discussions more difficult because there are clearly those who strongly adhere to Christian teachings or the teachings of Islam or any other major or minor religious belief. And we've got this kind of dynamic where we're talking about realistically race politics, but we're pretending that we're doing this as if it was a discussion about religion. Mm-hmm. And it's not.
Absolutely.
You can have this and should have all these separate discussions of religion, but the discussion going on, the support of Trump and all this is not a religious one because it doesn't fit with their own stated religious beliefs. I Absolutely. Talk with my hands. I keep my hands.
Absolutely. You know what, folks? We have to take our last break. Rich is looking at me. Rich is about to punch me in the eye, knock me out over here. We got to pay some bills, folks.
All right.
We're going to take our last break, and we will be right
back.
Thank you for downloading this episode. Here on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play Music, or whatever podcasting library you're listening to the show on, please rate and review. Those reviews and ratings help us tremendously. We thank you.
This is Quraysh Ali Lansana, poet, author, educator, and Oklahomie. And when I listen to podcasts, I'm on that one mic, one voice joint.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. Hey, I'm having some fun, man.
Me too. This is always awesome having Dr. Ketchum in the
You know, it's a deep space. Discussion, folks, but I think we're delivering it to you in a way that you can accept it. You might title yourself as an evangelical. This is not meant to attack you, but it's meant to, I think, educate you on really what's going on around you. I think oftentimes, you know, we have these strong beliefs and we find ourselves following people that do not see the world as we do. Mm-hmm. And what I want to say to you today is I hope that the veil falls, you know, from your eyes, the scales, you know, as the Bible says, fall from your eyes And you can see, because folks, evangelicals are anti-gay, anti-women, pro-war, anti-abortion, but pro-death penalty. So you care about the life that hasn't come into the world more than the life that exists in the world. You're against the Health Care Act, which feeds the poor, when Jesus said, when I was hungry, you fed me. You care less about the incarcerated. He said, when I was in a prison, you came to visit me. These are tenets of your faith. And you have supported a man that could care less. Matter of fact, the Central Park Five, the young kids that were falsely accused of rape and was put on death row, he called for their execution. And today he will not apologize. That's who you supported. So, folks, we're trying to get down to the brass tacks. Why you supported him? White Christian nationalism. Mm. That's what we're talking about. We're not talking about religion, Doc. We're talking about a group, an ideology that says we need to keep America white and those in charge need to be white. Has nothing to do with religion. We're going to use Jesus to put forth this message, though.
Yeah, and that's the point I've been trying to make, or at least work our way to, is that this the evangelical community and other communities are having these internal discussions about their belief versus their politics. But what we're seeing on the national stage right now is a political movement, not a religious one. And I think the history of it falls under this. We have a long history in the U.S. of being very tolerant of different religious beliefs. And so if you have whatever your statement is, how the one area you can say something that is unpopular is you make the claim that that is my religious belief, so I'm allowed to have that. And we as a nation have tended to back off from too much challenging of those types of statements. So what I think you've got here is a group that has used that unspoken clause of religiosity should not be challenged to, instead of having a religious agenda, having a political agenda designed to grab power. And that I think I mean, the as much as I don't like that that's what's being done, the brilliance of it is it keeps everybody off guard, because it's really hard to attack that, their actions, their claims, their statements, without being accused of being anti-religious or anti-Christian or whatever the case is.
Because they say Christianity is under attack in America.
Right, even though we are like, this.
We have more churches than ever before.
Yeah.
All over the place.
Every.
But they're under attack.
The only group that couldn't get elected to president right now in the U.S. is an atheist. Which and there are studies that show this.
Yeah, yeah.
So if Christianity is under attack, you'd think we'd have atheists running the country. It's clearly not the case. So, you know, it doesn't make sense, but they're using this kind of unspoken clause, like I said.
But Donald Trump, he eats his little cracker and he takes his little bit of wine. And it's the only one he has during the year.
Right.
Or at all, you know, so.
And he has forgiveness.
And he has,
it says.
I mean, to me, and I don't want to. Nah, never mind. Go ahead, Mike.
But the idea of forgiveness is a confession that you've done something wrong, and the idea of repentance means that. Guess what? Matter of fact, I can tell you this. Okay, repentance comes from a Greek word, metanoia. It means that you're going in one direction, you're going in the other. It is a confession upon what you have done. It has nothing to do with I take a little cracker and a little wine. I mean, I cannot believe that these people are not appalled that he has hijacked their religion and made it as weak as it is in the eyes of those outside of the religion.
I don't think he hijacked the religion. I think this is something we've seen. He's just the latest iteration of it.
He's hijacked them, maybe.
I mean, at some point, people are willingly going along with the political movement and trying to ignore the fact that what they want politically is not the same as what their religious teachings mm-hmm. state. It boxes us in conversations because we want to talk about it as if it was religious, mm-hmm. but there really isn't a religious basis for Trump and his.
Absolutely. You know, and I'm so glad you said that, because part two and three of American Christianity and nationalism really has nothing to do with Christianity. Huh.
And, you know, I think it's important that as you mentioned, Dr. Ketchum, that it being about power and dominion, because that's what white nationalism is.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, you know, it says that Christian nationalists believe in a revisionist history, which holds that the founding fathers were devout Christians who never intended to create a secular republic. Although they talked about, you know, separation of church and state, no religious tests in the Constitution. According to their history, it is a fraud perpetrated by God-hating people.
As I said, we have a long history of manipulating, mm-hmm. you know, religious teachings to support whatever our desired outcome is. Our, you know, if we're looking for dominance, whatever group we are in this country, it's largely white male, heterosexual, Christian-esque, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. Able-bodied, mm-hmm. et cetera, straight. All of these groups will modify the rules or the interpretation so that it somehow benefits us. And we see these very strange manipulations mm-hmm. of teachings,
yeah.
I've got to quit talking with my hands. Of teaching, if you guys could see me, it's just ridiculous. I look like I'm flinging things around.
You in a studio, baby.
I know. There's a reason they never show my face anywhere. but we have this long history of manipulating teachings for the benefit of the few, and what we're seeing here is very much anti-non-white. We see this very closing of the ranks of all of these groups. I mean, this Trump stands his stated views minimize non-whites, women's, gay community, people, disabled people, mm-hmm. all of these different groups.
Yeah, that was crazy when he did the disabled.
I thought that one was the one that would cause him.
Yeah, I mean,
to,
it was like crazy, right?
And then
it's
when
like,
he went dude, after dude. McCain,
yeah, it's like
was the other one. I was like,
dude,
okay,
was
well,
like
that's
torture.
Yeah,
right?
that's you know that, I mean? Yeah. I like my war heroes not captured.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, right? Exactly. It's just
the dude. Okay. I don't even agree with McCain on anything politically.
Zero.
I have some respect. I have some real respect for what he's done in his history and
oh,
all
absolutely.
Of that.
He's a veteran.
The you know? Dude was offered release as a POW and refused to go to stay with his men. And the president-elect, you know, called him not a hero. And I'm amazed. I'm amazed that happened to this day. I just,
oh, man.
And there's so many different areas on that.
But you know, like Father Flager said last week, mm-hmm. when he heard that Donald Trump attacked John McCain, he said it was over for Trump.
Yeah.
But he said white nationalism is even bigger.
Yeah.
Than our veterans.
Well, have to rally.
And we seem to forgive. And this is what Trump seems to have locked into really well. We're willing to forgive apparently anything at this point, mm-hmm. as long as it potentially benefits us, our group. And I think that he got rid of any.
Protect the status quo.
He could care less about decorum, about tradition, about what would be acceptable. And he read correctly that, I mean, he stated at one time he could kill somebody
and get away with it.
And he was right because.
Right. He was right.
He was. I mean, they did. We don't know that he killed anybody directly, right. but he correctly read.
Oh, yeah.
People where they were going to tolerate anything he did as long as they saw a payoff for them, or at least enough people said that.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think there's Donald Trump was a desperate candidate that really had nothing to lose. Mm-hmm. He didn't care whether he won. He didn't even think he was going to win.
Nobody did.
So he could say whatever he wanted to.
Right.
And it resonated. And I think, you know, when we. You know, as we unpack this election, folks, we want to make it clear that what happened in our country, no one should be shocked about. Uh-huh. We were birthed, okay, in subjugation, in slavery, in genocide. Okay, we came to a country that had native peoples. That we tried to eliminate, that we tried to Americanize, that we tried to strip them of their culture in their language. We brought Africans here, enslaved them. We instituted separate but equal. We instituted Jim Crow, convict leasing, right? Okay, mass incarceration today, which Dr. Ketchum is an expert in. Our history is one in which white folks have tried. Well, let me say this. White males, because women don't understand. Hmm. Women have been debased in our society forever. They didn't get to vote till 1920. So what I'm saying is no one should be shocked that this sort of rhetoric and anger and I'm being discriminated against. Because I'm white, exists in our country today because white males have always desired to rule this nation, not just this nation, but anywhere that they can plant their feet on. Mm. That's the reality. That's what we're fighting against today.
You just broke the mic right there, Mike. I'm like, wow, what do we say next?
We say yes.
Yes. All of that.
You're absolutely correct.
All of that. And I want to say, Doc, it's a pleasure to have you here with us today.
Sir.
You know, we're going to be doing part 2 and 3. If you find yourself, if you can get off your horse.
Right.
Get off my high horse. Is that what you're saying?
And come on in. You're more than welcome.
I will come back anytime you are willing to have me. You know, one of these days I would love to come back and dissect how Trump was elected.
Okay. Let's do it.
Yeah.
I would love to do that because I think a lot of the takes on it are not correct.
Absolutely. But we can talk about that. We can talk about that. Folks, listen, it's been a great show. You know, you can listen to this live show on Spreaker.com.
Spreaker.
Thank you, brother. I'm a brother from the hood, so I need that correction. See, he's an educated college graduate.
Did he politely just tell me that?
He pretty much just told me that we're not from the same place.
He just like, put you in your place.
So spreak.com. Listen, folks, you can catch the live show on there. You can catch it on Facebook. We're going to be posting it. We'll also be posting on our Twitter account because history will speak of us. Somewhere in the distant future, a scribe will reach down deep into the archives of our time. And what will she find? Will she discover that we overcame our differences? Will she find that out of many, we became one? Or will she find that we solved nothing and remain a divided peoples? Yes, history will speak of us.
We can make a difference if we try. We can be the change that's in our lives. Oh, we- we gotta do is work together. We gotta raise our children better. We gotta stop the hate, and spread the love.
One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice.
Your choice.
Today's broadcast is being brought to you by Blackened Studios. To learn more about Blackened Studios, please visit them at blackenedstudios.com or visit them on their Facebook page, Blackened Studios. Today's broadcast is also being brought to you by Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. To learn more about Perry Publishing and Broadcasting, please visit their website at perrypublishingandbroadcasting.net. The opinions of the One Mic, One Voice show do not reflect the views of Blackened Studios or Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. Thank you for downloading the One Mic, One Voice show.